Hey, this is Dan Hansis alongside Chris Wessling.
Hey, Dan.
Mark Sessler and the boss, Greg Rosenthal. We're the Around the NFL podcast. Check us out three times a week as we discuss the latest NFL news as it happens. Always, of course, with a touch of mirth. Subscribe at NFL.com/podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the U.S. Marine Corps. And Bucky, we have got a loaded show today.
We have a lot of intriguing things in the show. We have a state of the franchise with the Atlanta Falcons. We're going to bring in our buddy to help us fix the Cleveland Browns. And we got a couple of nuggets when we talk about the perfect pairings for everyone.
Yeah, we're looking at the perfect pairings in the AFC East today, so that's going to be a fun one. And a sit-down with one of the top wide receivers in this draft class. But before we get to all that stuff, big pro day today. We've got UCLA going. We also have North Carolina going, your old school, and a quarterback in Mitch/Mitchell. You can go either way now. Apparently.
I'm glad he opened it up for us.
Yeah, so we're free now. Mitch/Mitchell, big pro day for him. And what were you hoping to see from him today?
I think the big thing for Mitch at his pro day, you wanted to see could he spin it to the level that we saw him spin it on tape. Meaning you want to see the accuracy, the ball placement. You want to see him deliver the ball in rhythm on time. I wanted to make sure that his feet and his eyes were connected. And so this is one of the more talented, pure passers that we've seen enter the draft in some time. I think he can be an upper echelon player at the next level. You're just trying to make sure that the talent matches up with what we saw on the tape for most of the season.
Yeah, look, his tape is really good. I think you can make a strong argument that just based off the tape this year, he had the best year in terms of timing, anticipation, accuracy, all that stuff was good. Now, the concerns obviously still exist. The lack of starts that he has is going to be the number one topic there. Didn't finish off the year maybe as strong as he would have liked. But in terms of just the physical school set, he has that, Buck. So when you're looking at where he could land in this draft, I think you get kind of a wide range of answers.
No, I mean, I think he's definitely a first-round pick. I think it's just a matter of when are you going to pull the trigger. As we get into the sweet spot, meaning the late teens to the 20s, I think that's where he probably comes off the board. He is a guy that we've talked about. What about the scenario if the Washington Redskins felt like they couldn't retain Kirk Cousins? Maybe they take him and slide him in. Maybe he can be the guy of the future. We've talked about other teams like the New York Giants, the Houston Texans, the New Orleans Saints, teams that could take him because they have other guys available that would allow him to really develop into that franchise quarterback. And saying all of those spots except for the Houston Texans where he probably would have to be forced onto the field right away.
Yeah, I would say when I start the range of where he could go, I think Chicago, I think that they're looking to a veteran there in
right.
Mike Glennon. They've committed to him. I don't see him there at 3. The Jets at 6, to me, is kind of where it starts, where it wouldn't totally shock me. I know they bring in McCown now, but I think that's kind of where the window opens up at 6. And I think you look at it really kind of the early 20s. I think in that range, 6 to early 20s is where we'll see him come off the board.
Yeah, I think you have to make the trigger, make the move if you want him to be your franchise quarterback. I think there are two guys that we can confidently say will probably be off the board in the first round, Deshaun Watson and Mitchell Trubisky in some kind of order. And so as you're looking at the teams that could possibly select him, I think you should certainly have to be in the late teens to early 20s range to be able to pull them off the board.
Yeah, and our Charlie Cashley had just recently pulled a bunch of teams, and it was pretty even in terms of whether they had Watson.
Kind of surprising.
Or whether they had Trubisky there. All right, the Atlanta Falcons, a team that just came oh so close to winning a Super Bowl, Bucky, just could not finish against the New England Patriots. Going to be a fascinating team to watch as we go to the draft and what they can do next year to just get that little bit over the hump. You lose your coordinator there in Shanahan, but all these key pieces still in place on this football team. And I know at the Combine, you had a chance to sit down with their general manager, Thomas Dimitroff, to get a state of the franchise with the Atlanta Falcons.
I've talked to coaches, I've talked to players about the Super Bowl hangover. As a front office guy, how do you deal with the Super Bowl hangover?
We talked a lot about it. We talked a lot about it with Arthur Blank. So we sort of used that time to kind of vent to each other and talk to each other about everything. And it wasn't even a vent. It was just, hey, where are we going? We were all very, very encouraged about where we are and were and where we've come from as a team. And we know that our arrow is pointing up, and it's a strong arrow, and that's what we believe. And Dan has a really uncanny way of relating to the millennials as well as relating to the veterans on the team, and he knows how to, you know, merge them and bring them all together in a certain way. And I think he'll do that, and I know he'll do that the way, you know, we're approaching everything moving forward.
You did a rebuild with a veteran quarterback. How does it change when you have a veteran quarterback who is getting a big note and you have a bunch of other guys that you're trying to fill in around him?
You know, you have to be creative. And when you come into a partnership with a head coach who can sit down and be very open-minded about what I've experienced over the years and share with me what he's experienced and what he wants from a nuanced standpoint from the team, even though he was a defensive coordinator, we both agree this is about, you know, we all go as our quarterback goes, right? And he was willing to continue to put the pieces around the quarterback and, again, continue to work with a young defense.
What are the traits, three or four of the core traits that you look for when you're evaluating players?
Positivity, passionate, persevering football players with a lot of competitiveness, a lot of grit, a lot of urgency in their play. It's more than three, of course, or four. It's about playing with urgency. We talk about it all the time. Urgent athleticism. It's not just the good, smooth, athletic guy. It's a guy like Devontae Freeman. It's in our mind. You know, those are the guys that really embody what we're looking for, the guys that play to the whistle, snap to whistle. Matt Ryan is a great example of that, playing with urgency, toughness, grittiness. That's what we're looking for.
When teams go to the Super Bowl, everyone else looks at those teams and try and glean lessons. So for you, when you look back at the journey, what lessons will you take that will kind of help you continue to have this team on the track where y'all are perennial contenders?
I just love what we were doing on offense, obviously led by Matt Ryan and where we were with Julio and everything. And defensively, we had a lot of young guys. And this is another feather in Dan's cap. As a head coach who's willing to start four rookies on his defense and feel confident with them and continue to prop them up and believe in them, I love that. It's one of the things I learned, that you can win, and you can win big with young guys. The coaches know from Dan Quinn that they're expected to coach the heck out of these guys. Even though there's going to be some ups and downs, that's a great thing. So knowing that we have a lot of young guys who are contributing and knowing that they went into the Super Bowl with a hint of naivety, and that was cool to see.
Great work there, Bucky. Just great work by you getting a chance to really see behind the curtain there with the Atlanta Falcons. And one thing that stood out to me from that piece is you've got a front office and a coaching staff very much on the same page.
Yeah, I think they're very much on the same page. The thing that I took away from what he talked about, urgent athletes, guys that play fast, guys that are young and can run around and make plays, but more so the fact that the head coach understands how to deal with the millennials, as he talked about. When you make that decision to pay the quarterback and surround him with talent, you have to go younger on one side of the ball, so you have to do it on defense, and the Atlanta Falcons have been successful doing it.
Yeah, they're definitely very just this close to winning a championship. We'll see if they can get over the hurdle there. One of the things we've done in these interviews, we've got a bunch of these GM interviews. We're going to roll them out as we go towards the draft. That's the first installment, but we've asked them for a scouting story, a road story. Everybody has their own story. We have our stories. We tell them all the time on Move the Sticks, but we wanted to get these general manager story, and here is Thomas Dimitroff's story.
I mean, I used to love getting in my van, and I had this Euro van, which was, you know, it had its camper. You know, I had my propane going, and I'm making my rice and tofu at that time. I'm now pescatarian. Ridiculous. I'm not even vegan anymore. But I remember traveling around, you know, and I'd take off from Boulder, Colorado. That was where I was living, and I would start doing I did two loops like most people did in the West. And I'd be in that van and be traveling all over the place, and I'd run into these old scouts, and they would be pissed at me. They would just say, look, you start doing that, and our bosses are going to expect us not to pay $120 at the Marriott at that time. They're going to expect us to get and go to a KOA for $45 or $25. So, man, I look back at that, and I think it seems like yesterday.
I remember those days, though.
Oh, I remember.
He was legendary. We always labeled scouts, right? We had you know this. There was some scouts we called the boy band scouts.
The boy band scouts.
We had the boy band scouts. Then we had the granola scouts, which Dimitroff was like the president of the granola scouts. We had the old angry scouts.
Yes, the crusty old veterans.
We had the preppy scouts. We had them all. We had them all labeled.
Yeah, TD traveling around in that Eurovan because we're out west. It's amazing to hear him tell the story. But, yeah, that is what he was known for, traveling around the Eurovan, making his own food, being the vegan, being kind of the artsy-fartsy guy in the scouting biz.
Yeah, God bless TD. All right, let's move on now. We're going to go perfect pairings here, Buck. We're going to try and find players here with their first two picks for everybody in the AFC East. And I'll start us off here with the New York Jets. A lot of needs on this football team. Roster needs a lot of help here, Bucky. I know they brought in some help at the corner position with Morris Claiborne, but I'm going to go pick number six, Marshawn Lattimore, who I think is the most talented cornerback in this draft class. You talk about somebody with elite speed, outstanding ball skills, very fluid, smooth, athletic. I think he'd be a great fit for them with the sixth overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a talented player. The way that he can walk up, he can play press, he can play off, he can bail, he's instinctive, he's athletic. He is a guy that has the potential to be a lockdown corner in the National Football League for a long time.
All right, we get a corner there in the first round at number six. Now, we get to pick number 39. A lot of different options for them, a lot of different places they could go. I know you're looking at maybe giving the offense a little bit of a shot in the arm there, Bud.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking about giving Cooper Kupp an opportunity to be a New York Jet. I believe he's a guy that really can be the heir apparent to Eric Decker on that offense. He's an outstanding route runner, does a great job making plays over the middle of the field, and he takes his game up a notch when he plays against very competitive guys. I think he's someone who's going to be a very, very productive player, maybe coming in as a number three or even a number two receiver and then moving forward to become a long-term starter on the perimeter.
Yeah, you look at somebody I think is, you can make a strong case, the best route runner in this draft class, really understands how to set things up, just instinctive, catches everything. You can play him inside, you can play him outside, a lot you can do with Cooper Kupp. So we got the Jets, Marshawn Lattimore, and Cooper Kupp at picks 6 and 39. All right, Buffalo Bills, you're up first here with a 10th overall pick.
I'm going to get him a big-time wide receiver. How about Mike Williams with the 10th overall pick? And the reason I'm going with Mike Williams, I want someone that can complement Sammy Watkins on the outside. Sammy Watkins is our vertical threat. He's the guy that makes the big plays on posts, goes, double moves. I need someone that can kind of do the dirty work underneath. Mike Williams is that guy. Big, physical, kind of bullies guys on the perimeter, catches the ball well over the middle of the field, and he's a red zone weapon. When you have Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback and you're building around a strong running game, you have guys that can command one-on-one coverage on the outside. I believe Watkins and Williams can get it done in Buffalo.
What was that song, the 90s song? You remember he's got the power. I think it was Snap.
Oh,
was that Snap?
Wow.
It's getting kind of hectic. Wow. Anyways, that's the song that goes in my head when I see Mike Williams. Very random thought there. Pick number 44, I'm going to go to a cornerback, and a guy you've been talking about for a long time in this draft process, Quincy Wilson, big physical corner. We've got a power wide receiver. Let's go get a big, powerful cornerback in Quincy Wilson who can match up with those big, physical wide receivers. Get your hands on the guy at the line of scrimmage, and then when you get down the field, be able to turn, locate, and make plays on the football. Did not run as fast at the combine as maybe we all would have hoped, but I didn't really see play speed as being a big issue for him on tape, Buck.
No, I don't think it's a big issue. In fact, I like this fit because they're moving to a more of a zone-based scheme. They're putting a premium on the pass rushers. They want their guys in the back end to understand, keep the ball in front of the defense, get your hands on receivers, jam and disrupt when they go to cover two. Quincy Wilson is built to play in that kind of scheme. I think it's a nice fit. That would be a nice selection for them at 44.
All right, Miami Dolphins, we're going to focus defense here with these two picks. I'm first up, pick number 22. Let's go Jared Davis, linebacker from Florida. And to me, one of the things I like about Jared Davis is, A, you hear great things about his leadership off the field, which is important, that inside linebacker spot. But I've got somebody that can come downhill and do the old school dirty work we used to see from the linebackers 10, 15 years ago, but then has that range, explosiveness, and athleticism to make plays sideline to sideline and match up in coverage. He would be a great fit in this defense.
He'd be a great fit because he is physical. He's nasty. He has some of that dog that you like in your defensive players. I mean, he plays to the line in terms of his physicality and aggressive. I like the violent nature that he brings to the position. I think he would be a great fit for them at 22. But I'm going to ask somebody in the back end, someone who is also equally as tenacious, smart player that can kind of control the defense. How about Marcus Williams from Utah?
Oh, I like that one.
Look, we talk about smart, tough, instinctive, being very, very competitive in the back end. I believe he has all of those traits in spades. Comes over the top, can play, comes downhill, makes nice tackles. He is someone who just has a knack for being able to create plays. He's a good player. I like him in the back end. I think he'd be a nice fit as we continue to upgrade this defense.
And you always say you can't win with dumb safeties. This kid is extremely bright. He can make all the calls, going to get everybody lined up and kind of control traffic, and then go make plays on the football as well. I'm a big Marcus Williams fan. All right, the Patriots here, couple picks for them at 72 and 96. Pick number 72, you have him looking at a corner.
How about Cam Sutton? Cameron Sutton from Tennessee comes over, and what I like about Sutton is his versatility. We had a chance to watch him in the Senior Bowl, played corner, played nickel, played safety. You think about Bill Belichick and what he asked his guys to do. He asked them to do a lot, play a lot of different roles, and it may change on a weekly basis. Cam Sutton is a guy that has the ability to be able to do that. I think you plug him into the secondary. He can play anywhere on the field. He goes with Eric Rowe and the rest of those guys as versatile players in the back end.
We're going to show the pick against App State, huh? You're going to do that to me? Is that really, guys?
I didn't call up the B-roll.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot with that. All right, I'm going to go pick number 96. How about just a physical specimen from Villanova? Tano Passanio, defensive end, Bucky. This is how you want guys to look when they get off the bus. You talk about tall, long, and muscled up, athletic. He is raw, no question. But we saw at the Senior Bowl once he figures this thing out, this could be a dominant defensive lineman.
He absolutely can be a dominant defensive lineman. You think about the length that he brings to the table, how hard he plays. Still learning the game, still understanding position. I think in New England it's a great fit. His ability as one of those long defensive ends to be able to play either outside in a 4-3 scheme or even as a 5 technique, maybe in a 3-4 scheme, I think he'd be a nice fit.
You know, the Patriots, we'll see. They may make some trades here, might be picking a little bit higher than pick number 72. We'll wait and see what happens there. But that's our perfect pairs for the AFC East. We'll continue to do this for all the divisions as we march towards the NFL draft. All right, Bucky, we got a big problem ahead of us here. But we're problem solvers here.
That's right.
The Sticks. We got the Cleveland Browns, okay? And we're going to fix the Cleveland Browns depth chart. So the way we're going to do this, we're going to each come up with a plan to fix Cleveland Browns. But okay, we have to find out which plan is the best plan. So in order to do that, we need to bring in the biggest Cleveland Browns homer at NFL Network, who also does a little double duty for the MLB Network, Chris Rose. Rose, what's going on, buddy?
I thought maybe you guys were bringing in Andrew Siciliano.
Well, see, Andrew, if you're 1A, Andrew's 1B in terms of just huge Browns fans. We also have a producer, Scott Henry, who would fall into that mix as well. But, Rosa, you're on assignment. You're working hard. You've taken a little time out of this trailer life that you're living right here to join us. So we're going to present you with some plans, and we need your vote, okay?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. I'm going to start off. We'll just kind of work with the picks that we have here. 1, 12, 33, and 52. Those are the Browns' first four picks.
Okay.
So I'm going to present my offensive plan here for the Cleveland Browns, Rose. Here's what I got first. I'm going to start out pick number 12, okay? I'm going to save number one for defense. Pick number 12, I'm going to go with O.J. Howard, the tight end out of Alabama, somebody who can give you that inline blocking presence, but also has the speed to get down the hash and make some things happen down the field. So I'm going to plug him in at 12. I've got Davis Webb, the quarterback. We're going to go 33 with Davis Webb, who's got that big size that you need to play in that division. You got to have a little more size than what Cody Kessler's bringing to the table. So I've got your quarterback at 33. And then at 52, I went and got you Cooper Kupp, a wide receiver that you can throw into the mix who's very polished and is going to be a nice complement to what you already have with the speedster on the other side there. So to me, I think we've got a nice little mix here for your offense, Rose.
Okay. Bucky, do you want to present your plan or do you want me to
– I'm going to present my plan because I want you to win it. I know you want to win a high level. It's very, very important that we bring a winner back to the land. So on offense, at 12, I'm going to give you a true winner in Deshaun Watson. Look, no one has won more games than he has won, 32-3, national champion, so he's going to bring that winning pedigree. At 33, I'm going to get a difference maker in the slot at tight end. How about Evan Engram, someone that can take the top off the defense, stretch the middle of the field? I know it's cold. Those guys don't want to chase behind him, particularly down in December, so I like that.
I like that. I mean, that's strong.
Then on defense.
Whoa. I get to go defense first.
I mean, like.
So you went 2-2, Rose. I went heavy on offense. We got to fix this offense, get things going. Now on defense, I saved the best for last. I get the number one overall pick, Myles Garrett. I'm going to plug him right in to a pretty good young defensive line now. You got some pieces in place. Now you have a true premier blue chip player on that defensive
side. See, I like this. Here's the problem with you in Cleveland. Like, you're not really embracing the legacy of the dog pound. When you think about the dog pound, you think about the defense, Hanford Dixon, Frank Minifield, all those guys playing on that side. You have to build a defensive squad. So I'm going to take Myles Garrett and make sure we have a pass rusher, someone that can knock people around, they can pelt them with dog biscuits. And then I'm going to come back with Quincy Wilson later to give us a cornerback in the mold of those guys on the outside, gritty, tough, competitive, all those things. You're trying to be too flashy.
Too flashy?
We're gritty. We're gritty.
Number one overall pick. We got Myles Garrett. They need to score some points. Rose, this offense needs to score some points.
See, but
help me out.
He understands that even with the cardiac kids, it's still about the defense and all that other stuff. Like,
go ahead, Rose.
Can I hop in here?
Yes. You are the guest.
Can I try and set this straight? We know what they're doing at one. That's done, sold, stamped. If a defensive end could wear 15, we'd be selling Garrett jerseys already, okay? So we got that taken care of. At 12, I like DJ's plan a little bit better than I like yours, Bucky. I'm, you know, in talking with you guys and other guys at the network, I'm just scared of this quarterback class. And I think we're so deficient in playmakers on both sides of the football. A guy like O.J. Howard can change that. Gary Barnage was great at catching footballs behind his head and between his legs, off his shoulder pads a couple of years ago. Injury plague last year. He's over 30. He's a great dude, but we need to freshen up the talent there. And I know that you could get a guy like Engram in the second round and probably be
Yeah, you're right there.
Yeah, 80% of the player that Howard can be.
85 to 9.
Okay. So you're close there. So I'm okay with DJ's plan there. At 33, I'm taking the best corner available. It's that simple. They got a fine last year in Jamar Taylor in that trade with the Dolphins where they gave up a seventh-round pick. They signed him to a three-year extension. They need Joe Hayden. He'll never be what he once was. He's had too many lower leg injuries. So they need another corner that can help him out, especially in playing the quarterbacks that they have to play in that division and the receivers that they have to try and defend as well. And then at 52... Oh God!
It's a lot of anguish.
This is the way it is.
A lot of anguish.
You know,
it's tough.
First of all, who's making these picks? Is this Sashi Brown, or can we like draft?
I think this video might be making the picks, Rose. Well, we're gonna get a lot of hits on this thing.
Well, right. Rosie, I just pulled out my trusty iPhone so I could pull out my calculator because I'm down with the analytics crowd, and the analytics have told me that my guys are more ready to lead a turnaround in Cleveland than your guy.
Yeah.
Just by looking at
the calculator?
The calculator. The
right. That's what it said, huh?
The number said. I'm a quant.
Yeah, Rose, what are we doing at 52, Rose? I gave you Cooper Kupp.
Not bad. I know he slipped a little bit at the combine that nobody liked that he ran a 4.74 or whatever he ran.
He ran a 4.62. Okay. You're exaggerating.
Fine, whatever.
Imagine how much slower it is in cold weather.
I think you need another receiver. I'd be okay with that. If they want to double down on a pass rusher too in this draft, I'm good with it. You know, Greg Williams is one of those guys that runs an exotic scheme. I hear that he just needs intelligent people in order to run it. So I'm okay with that. We need a safety. Our safeties stink. I mean, I almost wanted to call Felix Wright and Chris Rockins and get those guys on the phone and say, come on home from the 80s. They need some serious help there. I mean, the problem was when they missed out on Tony Jefferson, I think it really kind of changed their draft a little bit. They offered more money than the Ravens did. And Jefferson said, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere where I don't play money. I don't play football for money. Wink, wink. But you know, that kind of changed, I think, a little bit what the Browns had to do draft wise.
Rose, here's the deal. I'm getting pressured for you to pick a winner, but I'm calling an audible here. So the producer's gonna be mad at me. I'm calling an audible. So I'm listening, right? That's what you gotta do. You gotta get this is our Browns draft room, the three of us here. We're gonna fix the Browns together. So I've compiled a list, a little bit of what I said, a little what Bucky said, and a little Rose magic sprinkled on top here. Okay, you ready for this?
Ooh.
Here's
yes.
what we're doing. We've come to agreement here. See if we can sign all three of us sign off on this. We're gonna go Myles Garrett at number one in agreement, right?
Okay, we're good on that.
Yeah.
We're gonna go with Howard the tight end at 12, which I think we can all get behind.
We can be good on that.
Okay, now we get to 33. We're going to go with Bucky's idea of taking a corner, which you endorsed a corner at 33.
Yes.
So we're going to go Quincy Wilson at 33, Bucky. Yeah, that was your guy there.
Okay. That's cool.
So now we've got our last pick, and now this is where I just need to sign off on this. Rose is saying safety, right? We need a safety.
Yes.
How about Bucky, Josh Jones from North Carolina State?
Nice.
Who ran in the 4.4s. He can cover a man to man. He can be that high safety. Yeah, he will knock you out. You talk about people throwing biscuits at players. I think he would eat the biscuits. He'd be in with that. So, Rose, can you sign off on this plan?
I can. As long as you guys are okay with him, apparently you guys know a little bit more about him than I do. Yes, I am signing off on the theory. Listen, the Browns are set up over the next two drafts to make substantial steps as long as they don't whiff on draft picks. They can't – I mean, they've barely gotten the bat off their shoulder. I hate to mix my sports metaphors here.
You understand
what I'm saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll
guys,
talk.
Here's the deal. If you guys strike it rich in this draft, I am going to redecorate my room so that I put pictures of you guys on the beautiful paneling wall.
Yes.
I like that.
Okay.
Let's go. So, by the way, let's go fix her up and get some shiplap. Let's turn those wood around. Let's make those things go laterally. Let's get some pretty shiplap going
too
there.
Many,
I
too many home
a
home
lot
home
of that.
Home
that. Hey, Roser, we got to run, dude. We fixed the Cleveland Browns. You signed off on it. You said we've got them fixed. We're done.
I mean, if it was that simple, I wouldn't have put up with 18 years of anguish since coming back in the NFL. But thank you. In 7 minutes, we fixed the Browns.
There you go. Chris Rose put his stamp of approval. Congratulations, Bucky. We fixed the Cleveland Browns.
I sign off on this. I give it my full endorsement. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Rose. So now that we've fixed them, how about we talk to one of the guys that you said would be a nice Brown? We'll throw to your interview with Cooper Kupp.
Chance to be joined right now by one of the top receivers in the 2017 draft class, Cooper Kupp from Eastern Washington. Cooper, we got a chance to see you down there in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, saw you again at the Combine, and now we're getting towards the end of the process, got your pro day ahead, and the draft will be here before you know it. How excited are you to put this whole thing behind you, get with a team, and just start playing football?
Yeah, no, I can't wait. You go through this whole thing to get to that point, so I'm excited to finally know where we're going to be at, what kind of team I'm going to be on, and just be able to go out there and play ball again.
Well, let's get back to the football thing here. In a minute, I'm going to ask you to put your scouting hat on. I'm going to throw some tape up, and we're going to let you break down some tape of some guys I know you followed and kept an eye on. But I want to tell your backstory a little bit for those that are listening and watching and haven't heard it. I asked you this question when we got a chance to meet a month or so ago. How the heck do you end up at Eastern Washington?
Yeah, so I came out of school in Yakima, Washington, AC Davis High School, and it had a pretty bad history of not having a good football
team. Give me the years. You told me how many years it had been since they had a winning season.
It was 40 years of not having a winning season. So, I mean, obviously had gone through some tough times. So we kind of came into a place where the school had been through stuff as well in terms of the public eye that wasn't good stuff as well. Mm. So there's a perception of that school already. As we came in there, we had a group of guys that wanted to turn that all around, the whole thing, the football side and just kind of the perception of the public had of it. And so, we got to go in there, and we did eventually. By my last 2 years, we were as close as you can be to not having a winning season. I think we were like 6-5 both years, 6-4. But it was still one of those things where, we were able to turn things around. And, the perception of the school changed. And that was ultimately the main goal, is creating that legacy. So that was a big part of why I went there. But it doesn't get recruited heavily.
Not a lot of coaches. Yeah, so, not a lot of college coaches rolling through there.
Exactly. So that's kind of part of why I ended up at Eastern Washington. But extremely blessed to be where I was.
Yeah, you got a chance to bloom where you're planted there. You get to Eastern Washington. And I've got your stats here because it's kind of ridiculous. You have to look at it to make sure that it's right. Do a double take here. 428 career receptions, 6,464 yards, 73 touchdowns. Your lowest touchdown year. What happened your sophomore year? Only 16 touchdowns.
I know. It's an off year for me.
What was going on with you?
It's an off year.
Jeez. But to me, the 52 starts, that speaks to the durability that you've had. And now, as you look forward, you got a chance to meet with some teams and meet with some coaches. I know you're inquisitive. Like, when you ask teams and coaches what they like about your game and maybe an area that they say you can improve at, and then from your own personal perspective, give me the answers to both those questions.
Yeah. So I guess first, the things I need to improve on. In my mind, there's no part of my game that I feel like is set. There's no part of my game that I feel like that I'm good enough in this part. Every part of my game is always under construction. So in that regard, for me, I'm my biggest critic. I'll always be my biggest critic. So there's a lot I need to improve on. And some of the things that I think stood out to me, especially at the Senior Bowl, I had an opportunity to obviously strap up in the end of January, where most guys have to wait until late spring to be able to do that. But I had an opportunity to kind of figure out what kind of things I want to improve on myself. And I feel this thing like at the top of routes, when you're running a curl route against two men, and you're running a route that should be canceled. Mm-hmm. You've got your DBs on your inside hip and trail.
Yeah,
and you
got somebody over the top.
And you're coming right back down to them. You got to figure out how to create separation still. Mm-hmm. And that's why I pride myself on. I'm going to make sure even when everything about this defense says I shouldn't be open, I'm going to make sure I can get open. So, being able to open my hips up more, come right back down my stalemate and be physical through the top of that route is going to give me an opportunity to be open still. So it's those kind of situations I want to be able to improve at. That goes right back to what my strength is I'm going to find a way to get open.
Yeah, I look at you, and we've talked about it before. We talked about it on our combine coverage, too, in terms of just route running. The Crispus. Is Crispus a word? I don't know about that.
Make it happen.
At App State, it's a word for us. So I'm going to go Crispus. I'm going to say he's a Christmas. Merry Crispus. You're just such a clean, crisp route runner, and the fact that you still want to improve in that area says a lot. I want you to put your scouting hat on, though. Now, okay. I want to throw some Antonio Brown up here in the screen. And I know you've talked about different guys you like to study and learn something from. What do you see from Antonio Brown when you watch him up here?
Well, he understands he's a quick guy. He knows – you see him at the line of scrimmage, he's very quick in his releases. Come to balance is his go-to, I think. And he's able to just run through contact. And a lot of stuff you're able to see here, especially those first two, is he's pulling through at contact. And that's something that, as a smaller guy, you see this here, hand fighting at the top of routes, and then being able to adjust on the ball. And something here he's quick. That's what it comes down to. He knows he's quicker than guys. He's able to set guys up and then make plays off the ball. And those first two plays, I think, were very special in the terms of He might not be the biggest guy, but he knows how to use his hands and get open. And when the ball is thrown his way, he's going to find a way to adjust and make the play.
Yeah, one of the things we'll say, the biggest transition for receivers when we get out there, when I was scouting, you get out there with teams, for what you saw in college, you get to on an NFL field, just getting off the line of scrimmage is going to be a big challenge for guys. So have you been working on your releases, continually getting ready to go, variety of releases? What's your go-to?
Yeah, so right here, come to balance is an important one. The best thing about come to balance is as you come to balance – you know, it gives you a two-way go.
Yeah.
You have power off of both feet, and so you're able to react quicker. And there's a great balance with Antonio Brown or with come to balance that,
yeah.
You know, it's not as much you're dictating, but at the same time you're having to react. You know, you can have an idea of what the DB is trying to take away. You're going to try to exploit that, but as soon as a snap happens, you know, that could be changing. So you got to be able to react to that the same way. Coming to balance gives you that opportunity to be explosive one way, but then be able to react, be physical through contact, and get back to your route.
All right, that's great. And let's go on to now. I think we've got some Jordy Nelson tape here. Get a little more size. I think frame-wise, Jordy Nelson compares a little bit more to you frame-wise. What do you see when you watch him here?
Yeah, well, I think he's a speed release guy. Dips his shoulder well here. Gets his leverage running this out route. He looks pretty solid here.
You can
here.
See a little bit of that punt return background that he had there at Kansas State back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, this is good here. Look at finding zone, seeing zone, knowing how to get open. He sees that Mike backer squeezing that zone. He's going to slide into that second window. Huge thing in the red zone. There's not a whole lot of space. So if you, as a receiver, if you're able to find that space, give your quarterback an opportunity to get you the ball, that's huge.
Yeah, we talk about spatial awareness and being such a big thing when you're working on option routes, you're working in zone coverage. Something that he's done very well, something that you do really well too when you get a chance to watch you on tape, that feel for what you're doing there. What when you watch Jordy Nelson – I see somebody at the top of the route being able to win. He wins some 50-50 balls, wins a lot of those. When you're going and watch you on tape, I see you do a lot of those same things. What's the key to you winning those 50-50 balls?
It's all a mentality at that point. It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter how big you are or what you can do in terms of how high you can jump. You got to be able to jump when there's pressure coming on your side. You got to be able to stop and jump back into people. It's a lot different than just running or just jumping a straight vertical. You know, there's this art form to being able to go up and get a ball. And a lot of it starts with the mentality. When the ball's in the air, it's yours. As a receiver, that's your ball. And you're going to make sure the last thing that's going to happen is this DB's going to end up with it. The worst case scenario, that ball's incomplete.
Yeah.
But that, when you go up for those things are yours. And there's a lost art form, I think, of being able to really adjust and be able to jump and snag the ball at its highest point when you've got someone on you.
Oh, we always say, like, guys like Dez Bryant be insulted if you use the term 50-50 because he thinks his chances are a little bit better than even there when the ball goes up in the air. See some of the same there with you. All right, we've gone through all the interviews we've had with players this year. We've tried to get three answers for them on three questions. So I want to hit you up with those. They're the three H's here. So the first question is, what's the biggest hardship that you've been through in your life? Could be football-related or off the field.
Yeah, my biggest hardship, it was a long-term thing. It was something I grew up with a certain group of friends that were all playing football. We played football, basketball, baseball together all the way through. When I was hit sixth grade, I just stopped growing, and all my other guys just started taking off. And I was on this basketball team, and travel basketball teams were all over the place. My dad would take me to them. I'm sitting on the bench, and my dad's watching me sit on the bench. And you know, everyone's slapping the backboard. I'm trying to touch the bottom of the net. And I remember my dad sat there, and I was on my way to practice, so two blocks away from this. From practice, and he said, you know, it's going to take more from you than it is these other guys. Mm-hmm. There's a certain level of heart that's going to have to propel you to where you want to go, and that stuck with me in terms of, you know, I'm nothing's going to be given to me. I wasn't blessed with this incredible talent. I wasn't blessed with speed or size or anything like that. I'm going to have to work if I want to keep up with these guys and be able to do what I want to do. And so, you know, that was the biggest thing, is going through these few years where I was struggling just to get by on these things, and just to even just hang out with my friends. I was like, if I want to play ball with you guys, I gotta make sure I'm working on my game. And so, you know, that was a tough thing for me. I learned how to work hard, but it ended up being a huge blessing for me.
All right, when did the growth spurt come?
The growth spurt didn't come until probably my sophomore, junior year.
And then you just hit, like, what, 6-7 inches one summer?
I did. So my freshman year, I was 5'4". 119 pounds.
Wow.
So that's the thing. I got ankle weights on, 2-pound ankle weights, so I was really about 115 pounds. and so, I mean, that's just kind of my starting point in high school. And so graduating about 6'1", 178. So even then, graduating out of high school, I was still working on where I am today.
Yeah, you had a couple more inches still to go there. All right, how about your greatest highlight now? Athletically, what would you say is your crowning moment there, your greatest highlight?
Greatest highlight. You know, I was able to play for some very good teams. You know, my freshman year, I got to play next to a guy named Ashton Clark. And he kind of took me under his wing, taught me a lot about the game. He was a senior, but I came in and kind of earned the one spot. And his reaction to that could have been, he had kind of had some other guys above him for a few years, but he took me under his wing and didn't take any, he just wanted to win. He didn't take anything out on me or give me any attitude or anything like that, because I had come in as a freshman taking his spot, basically. But he, you know, put his nose down. He said, I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to take it on me, and we're going to be the best duo we can be. And, you know, being able to, I think we, for our time, set the record for most yards between two receivers on the same team, and we're able to go win a Big Sky championship as a freshman, and that was just so much fun for me to be able to, you know, play alongside him.
Oh, that's a good one. Now, the final H here is an easy one here. Who's your hero?
My hero is my dad.
Right. Tell for those that don't know about your family, why don't you start with your grandfather, then get to your dad here for those who know your story.
So my grandpa, he played for the Saints back in the day. He played for a few teams, but played most of his time with the Saints back in the 60s with Archie Manning. And then my dad was drafted by the Giants, I believe, and played with the Cowboys for, I think it was only 2 years. But, you know, so having those bloodlines is obviously huge. I mean, I came in as my love's been my passion is football, and I get to share that with my dad and my grandpa, which is a huge thing. And so, you know, being able to grow up with them was just incredible. And just not even just the football settings, but the men that they are and the care they have for people was really something that you know, I want to emulate in my life.
All right. Now, you're married. Last question. How has being married, how is that going to help you be a better football player? I don't know. Have you been asked that question yet?
Something along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to hit you with that one.
So my wife's my biggest encourager, my biggest fan, my biggest supporter, and she knows – she was an athlete herself, a Division I athlete, so she knows the sacrifices it takes to be great and knows my goals better than anyone else does, and she knows what it's going to take to get there. And you know, she's having two people working alongside each other to achieve those goals is a huge thing. And, you know, I've got someone in my corner that's pushing me to be the best that I can be, even when I don't maybe want to. And I pride myself on pushing myself as hard as I can possibly be at all times to be the best. And I got her coming alongside me to do that as well. And so it's a huge blessing in my life. And I'm very excited moving forward and going and striving to be the best that I can be.
Can't cheat your reps when you got a wife. She's not going to let you cheat your reps there.
No, she's not.
You're going to get them all in. Hey, that's Cooper Kupp, one of my favorite players to watch in this draft class. Cooper, best of luck. Can't wait to see where you go, and excited to watch your future, your NFL future unfold.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, Bucky. Well, Cooper Kupp, to me, I think, look, you can talk about, we can debate his ceiling all we want. I think he's got an extremely high floor in this draft class.
Well, absolutely, because you can buy it to the kid. You know he's going to be dedicated. You know he's going to be determined. He's going to be on the details. He's going to be disciplined about working on his craft. That's going to give him an opportunity to carve out a nice career in the National Football League.
Yeah, the dude loves football. I mean, there's no question about that. Absolutely. Now, there's a little bit more to that interview as well. If you want to check out the entire interview, all you got to do is go to NFL.com/MTSvideos. You can check it out there, or just get the audio version of the Move the Sticks podcast. We'll have it all in there in its entirety there with Cooper Kupp. All right, Bucky, some interesting news just kind of came down from our Ian Rappaport, who's reporting that Cam Newton has a partially torn rotator cuff and going to undergo surgery here pretty soon. This is pretty major development.
Well, I think it's a major development. Without knowing more about the ins and the particulars of the injury, the fact that it's his throwing shoulder and he's having surgery, that probably takes him out all of the mini camps, the OTAs, and may linger into training camp and into the regular season. You're the Carolina Panthers. You have a nice backup in Derek Anderson, but does that change your draft plans in terms of maybe finding a number three quarterback that you may have to lean on?
Well, just work with me on this, as this is the way I'm looking at this right now. One of the things with a quarterback, you hurt your shoulder. The first thing that we think about, right, is he's throwing shoulder. Like, this is going to impact him as a thrower. I'm looking at it saying there's no more physical runner in the NFL than Cam Newton. He's going to have to dial that way back, especially coming off of a shoulder injury in this next upcoming season. You know what would really help when you need somebody else to run the rock, when you hold the sixth overall pick?
Maybe a running back?
Yeah, maybe a guy down at LSU. Ooh. He's pretty physical, too.
He might. And I think now that we say they discovered this in Week 14, it begins to kind of connect the dots. Ron Rivera and his staff had talked about changing and becoming more of a traditional offense, putting Cam under center, doing some of the things where they take some of the responsibility away from him as a runner off his shoulders. Now we begin to understand why that may have been a big initiative in the offseason.
Yeah, look, that's going to be a challenge there for the Carolina Panthers moving forward. But I do think you get Leonard Fournette, put him back there. You can keep your physical identity as a football team. You just don't ask your quarterback to do that.
Well, I mean, I think it changes that. Obviously, you want to be more physical. It also changed the way they approach their red zone. You talk about a guy who's been maybe the most prolific quarterback when it comes to rushing touchdowns in NFL history. Now you want to take all of that off his plate. Let somebody else try to find a way to get into the goal line.
All right, Bucky, we got busy today. We got a lot of things,
stuff.
A lot of things we accomplished on today's episode here. We've got plenty more to come. We're talking about our audio podcast. You guys can check that out on iTunes as well as NFL.com/podcast. We're on Path to the Draft Monday through Friday.
You got that.
6 Eastern. You can check us out on there. We'll keep these video shows, keep cranking these things out as well. So lots of Move the Sticks content going to continue to come your way. Again, Move the Sticks presented by the U.S. Marine Corps. Thank you guys for checking us out, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.